I'm here with Suzanne Jenkins, the author of The Greeks of, is it Bobian?
Bobian Strait. Mm-hmm.
All right. So you can you briefly describe what the book is about?
The book is about a young woman who's a homicide detective on the Detroit police force who grew up in a grocery store in Greektown. And basically it's just, she still has her roots and is very ingrained in the life in Greektown, but her father was born in the United States, but he's very old country. So she's always walking that fine line between her job that's very in the here and now and the old country Greek way. But as the book unfolds, she finds that really her family was subject to the same, you know, trials that people that live in modern society, even though they were trying to be on the straight and narrow, they were just human beings. So that's basically what it's about.
So why did you decide to write this?
I really wanted to write a story about Greektown. It started out, I wanted to do something right about Greektown and about what it meant to me, because my family wasn't religious. So we didn't have the, you know, Orthodox church that a lot of the Greeks that we knew, their lives centered in the church. Ours centered in food. So, but we didn't, I had a mentally retarded sister, and so it wasn't really easy to go out to eat. So we didn't, we went to Greektown to buy the supplies to cook the food at home. And all of our family activities revolved around food. It was always about the food. We didn't have any other tradition but the Greek food. And my family didn't speak Greek in the home. So if I thought about what made me Greek, it was the food that we ate. And so as I started, I thought, well, nobody really wants to hear that, and I can't write a whole story about that. And so I always have had a fascination with police. I think I'm kind of obsessed with police work. And that's basically how it started.
Right, the two just came together.
Yes. I wanted her to live there in town. And I love Detroit, but I remember the Detroit I remember is the Detroit where we were, when we were 10 years old, we could take the bus from Dearborn, where I lived, and spend the day shopping in town. And I wanted it, I still wanted it to be somewhat the old Detroit. But then the reality is that when the riots happened in 67, a lot of changes took place. And I wanted to be true to that as well.
Right. So it's almost like the traditions that you remember about being a Greek American in Detroit, you know, and Jill's experience with that almost fuse with the new reality of, unfortunately, the high crime rate in Detroit and, you know, this kind of almost CSI sort of work that that Jill does.
Right.
There.
And it was easy to write that because people who watch television now, I didn't have to get into that too much, the investigative stuff, because everybody knows. They know about DNA and they know about crime scene investigation. So it was really easy. I could sort of start off where those programs ended, you know?
So how much of this connects with your real life? You know, how much of Jill is you, I guess?
Well, I'm interested in the spiritual. And so I wanted her to be spiritual. But I'm an ex-nurse. I'm not retired, but I'm not working at nursing. And so I wanted, that's where the morgue came in. I wanted to be able to talk a little bit about, and, you know, let's see, how can I put this? I wanted to be able to talk about what, and bring in some of what I know about medicine. And that's where the autopsies came from.
Right. And Bobien Street is, of course, a real street in Detroit.
Yes.
You know, why did you choose to set this book not only in a real city, but why did you choose to pick out these real places like Bobien Street?
I think I remembered when I was a child, we would go to Eastern Market. And now, I don't know if it's still there, but there was a place that I think it was called Plum Street, that was around Greektown, and there were a lot of artisans, and I just loved the atmosphere when I was a kid. I loved it, and that's the only reason, because I was familiar with it.
So do you think that people who are from Detroit reading this book will really kind of, you know, you'll kind of give them a sense of nostalgia, you know, looking back and saying, I know what that corner is
like. I hope so.
Yeah. And getting into the real meaty part of the book, you know, a lot of this is about family dynamics, you know, which you actually have a book called Family Dynamics, another book. But I think it's really interesting that we get to see many different types of families interacting, because we've got obviously Jill and her big Greek family, big extended family, who they're all very tight-knit. And then we've got Gretchen, the victim, her family, which is, you know, not necessarily any less tight-knit, but, you know, they have some interesting issues that play out there. And then we have the Wong's family, which is actually Albert and his partner.
And Nana Wong.
Yeah.
I loved her.
Nana Wong is one of my favorite characters.
Yes, I loved her. Well, like the Parkers, Gretchen's family, they were very isolated. And I think that's, even though they lived in town and he was a retired policeman, and being isolated as they were, it really allowed a lot of what happened to them to take place. And then in Jill's family, I'm just intrigued with human relationships. And so I was able, because there were so many of them, I was able to put a lot of just things that I've experienced over the years. And in the sequel to it, there's a lot of my own marriage in it, into those different people without offending anybody. You know, I could put stories that I had known about, but that weren't specific. So, yeah, I'm sure that my family will, they won't stop talking to me once they read it. There's nothing to that you can really identify about anybody that would make anybody uncomfortable.
Well, I'm sure they'll be good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes.
Talking about relationships, it, you know, it really does make you think about your own relationship with your significant other and things like this, all of the different couples in the book and how they interact. And, you know, without giving too much away, there's a lot of cheating that goes on here.
And if you think about, like, Greek mythology, I mean, it's just human nature. It's not a pleasant part of it, but there, the whole dynamic between the brothers and the Jill's father, who's such a loving, kind of innocent soul, you know, at the end of the book, you find out that he did have a motive in everything that he allowed to happen in his life, and it didn't have that really a great outcome. So, yeah, there is a lot of cheating.
I guess not relationship, but an interesting sort of friend group that I really paid attention to in the book was the three women who were married to some of the Greek brothers.
The English.
Yeah, the English, because they weren't Greek.
Yeah, there is a little family history. Because we had the Greek, there was a lot of Greek brothers and in my family, and none of them married a Greek woman. They all married, one of my uncles married a Polish lady, and my mother was English, but they were really accepted in my father's family and loved. And but I really liked that because now I have an Italian friend who some of that dynamic actually came right from her family, or the old family, where the wives were just ostracized.
The sequel, is that, that's not come out yet?
No.
But you're working on it.
I'm working on it.
And then, you know, do you think there will be a third to round this out? Like
there
you
might
did?
Be, but I started another series, and I'm having a lot of fun with that.
Oh, yeah?
So
what's that?
It's
that gonna be
well,
about?
The kind of working title is Alice's Summertime Adventures, and it's I love anything about middle-aged and older women, and she's having an adventure, so I don't want to say anything more than that because I don't really know what's going to happen with it. I wanted to start it out being really lighthearted, just different from anything else I've ever written, but it's getting to be very dark. Like all my other books are have a dark side, so I am having a lot of fun with that.
So why did you say that you love middle-aged women? You know, what is the interest there?
I just think, well, when I turned 60, I'm 62, when I turned 60, my whole life changed. I just suddenly was able to say no, and I don't do anything I don't want to do, and I'm able to do everything that I want to do. And so that whole, from about 45 to 60, when you're really beholden to everybody else, you're taking care of your family, or you're, you know, either your career is going to make it or not, or you're going to make the decision that now is the time that you better do what you really want to do, because pretty soon you're going to be dead and you're not going to be able to do it. And when I went to school, I was an OR technician, and then when I was 38, one day I just decided, okay, if I'm going to do it, I have to go to nursing school now. I always wanted to be the nurse. So I went and became a nurse. And it was very hard. Nursing school was just horrendous, especially I had teenagers and I was, you know, no spring chicken. But I did it. And then I realized that nursing is really hard. Being the registered nurse is a really, really hard job. You have, like, you're the patient advocate and you have, like, life and death. You have so much that you're capable of doing wrong. And so I did that for 12 years, and then when my kids graduated from college, I was kind of free to do something else. And I think somebody said something to me one time about how this isn't a dress rehearsal, and the time for a woman to realize that is when they're in their 50s. You better do what you want to do, because pretty soon you're not going to be able to do it. Either you'll be too old or you'll be retired and you won't have the, you know, any kind of financial ability to do anything different than you're doing at that minute. So that whole, and to see decisions that people make as they approach retirement, that just intrigues me. And nowadays, too, it's surprising the number of women I know that are getting married late in life or getting a divorce. That just, wow.
Yeah, it's, and, you know, some of that you talked about, I won't say which parts, but some of that plays out in this book, you know, especially people at an older age reevaluating that relationship with their spouse or their lover or what have you. So, is there anything else that we didn't go over about the book?
We talked about the location. When I was growing up in Dearborn, Blazo's, and I think I mentioned Blazo's, it was a drive-in restaurant. Our teen years were spent at Blazo's. And I really hope that, I don't even know if it's still there, but Blazo's and in Douglas, at the end of the book, the restaurant Christo's shows up a lot. That's a real place that I love. It's a place that locals go to. And, you know, I hope that that readers can identify with the location.
Anything else that you want to talk about?
I was raised with, nowadays they're referred to as special needs children, and that whole dynamic in the book about the Down syndrome brother, that really, I'm hoping that it's not offensive to people because he was brought up. Nowadays, the group homes are really a big thing, but, you know, Plymouth State Home isn't open anymore. But back in the, you know, 50s and 60s and 70s, it was a place where people who had children that they couldn't take care of at home would go to live. So I'm wondering if, I hope that I don't hurt anybody's feelings, that section of the book.
Now, I guess,
is problematic for me.
I guess I'm a little, I'm trying to remember. I thought that, does he live in a group home in the
book?
Now
he lives in a group home. When the state home closed, he went right into a group home and is happy there. It was all people that he grew up with. And he has a wonderful, you know, if in the perfect world, but in our situation, my mother died. I have a special needs sister, and it was really difficult to find a place for her to live that would be convenient for the family to visit her and where she would be safe and happy. And fortunately, we found that. But it's expensive, and it's not a possibility for everybody.
Well, and I think despite, you know, what people may think about that part of the book, I think that that's a really... a conversation that the public needs to have, that people need to know that, you know, it's not easy to find care sometimes, good, you know, mm-hmm. responsible people that you can trust mm-hmm. with your loved ones, you know, people that you care so much about. During at least the first part of the book, part of the reason why they don't keep Christopher, which is the special needs boy in the book, is because of the grandmother's opinion.
She didn't want the child to come home because she thought it would be too disruptive. But I think we can't really talk about it because it'll give some of the secrets away, that she knew more than they gave her credit for, and she was afraid that it would be more than disruptive to have him come there. So the child, really, the consequence of the parents' actions, then he was, you know, sort of banished to the state home. So, yeah, mm-hmm. it was really... And then when Jill discovers everything that happened, she's really angry about it. And that does carry through to the second book.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming here today.
Thank you so much for having me.